All right, everybody, welcome back. We're going deep today
Deepest
in the world of the Bible.
Yeah.
But not the stories you might think.
Right.
We're talking maps.
Yeah.
We're talking ancient cities.
Uh-huh.
We're talking about the historical geography of the Bible.
That's right.
Now I know what you're thinking.
I think so.
Oh, geography. That sounds boring.
Yeah. You know all those names and places?
Exactly. But trust me on this one.
Okay. I'm trusting you.
Our expert today brought a lecture all about this.
I did.
And it's anything buddy boring.
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah.
So what's the big deal with all these ancient places? Like, why should we even care?
Well, you see, it's not just about knowing where things were.
Okay.
It's about understanding how the physical world,
mm-hmm.
how that actually shaped the course of history.
Oh, I like that.
Especially for the Israelites.
Okay.
The relationship with God.
The relationship with God.
And the geography of where they lived. It really was like this incredible testing ground for their faith. A testing ground. Okay, tell me more about that.
So picture this, right?
Okay.
This land between, as they call it.
The land between.
He was literally sandwiched between these giant empires.
Okay.
Powerful cultures.
Right.
And even like totally different climate.
Oh, wow. So they were constantly, under pressure from all sides.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Imagine like caught between... You know, the superpowers of Egypt.
Yeah, Egypt.
Mesopotamia.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a tough spot.
Yeah, and all that tension.
Yeah.
It really must have had a huge impact on the Israelites.
Oh, I bet.
You know, just their whole worldview.
Totally.
Their place in the world.
So it wasn't just about, like, the physical location. Yeah. It was this whole cultural pressure cooker.
Exactly.
But hold on.
Yeah.
The lecture also talked about all this amazing abundance in the land.
Yes.
Like... grain and new wine and oil.
Oh.
It seems like they had it pretty good too, right?
Well, yes and no.
Okay.
You're right. Those agricultural blessings were huge.
Yeah.
But they weren't just random products, you know?
Oh.
They were like deeply symbolic for them.
What do you mean?
Like woven into their whole way of life.
Okay.
And their faith.
Mm-hmm.
Like take grain, for example.
That grain.
It represented God's provision.
Mm-hmm.
Like tangible evidence of their covenant relationship.
I never thought of it like that.
It's a good harvest.
Yeah.
It wasn't just good luck.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
It was a sign of divine favor.
Wow.
A sign that they were doing things right.
Okay. But what about when the harvest was bad? I can only imagine what that would do.
It would send them into a tailspin.
Right.
Yeah, because they would see it
like
droughts and famines,
mm-hmm.
not just as natural disasters,
right.
but as divine consequences.
Oh, wow.
For, like, straying from the path.
So the land itself was, like, this direct reflection of their relationship with God.
That was a barometer.
That's intense.
Yeah, and it gets even more interesting. When you consider how they actually cultivated those crops.
Okay, yeah, we're not talking, like, John Deere tractors here.
No.
Right.
This was back-breaking labor.
Yeah.
Working in harmony with nature.
Totally.
Dependent on the land,
mm-hmm.
the seasons,
yeah.
for their very survival.
I mean, imagine those ancient vineyards.
Oh, yeah.
Just clinging to those rocky hillsides.
Clinging to the rocks.
Just to gather enough dew to survive.
And those tiny wine presses.
Oh, yeah.
Carved right into the bedrock.
It's amazing.
Talk about resourcefulness. Yeah, but remember, it wasn't just about practical skills.
Right.
Their survival was about faith.
Okay.
They truly believed that their success,
mm-hmm.
even down to the smallest grapevine, depended on God's blessing.
Okay, so we're talking about a deep connection.
A deep connection.
Between the people,
mm-hmm.
their faith, and the land.
Absolutely.
And honestly, I think that's something that we miss a lot today.
We do.
You know, in our modern world.
It's easy to forget.
Yeah. It's easy to forget where our food comes from.
Yes.
How much we depend on the natural world.
Absolutely.
Okay. So we've talked about this land between this idea of agricultural blessings.
Yes.
And this constant tension between abundance and scarcity.
Right.
But the lecture also mentions all these other sources that shed light on the region.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not just talking about the Bible here.
It's so much more.
Tell me more.
Okay. So.
Yeah.
We have these Egyptian expedition journals
mm-hmm.
boasting about, you know, all their conquests.
Yeah.
Then we have Assyrian inscriptions.
Okay.
Even mentioning, like, the House of David.
Oh.
And then get this.
Yeah.
We even have these ancient post-it notes.
Wait, post-it notes.
Yes, a little messages.
Really?
Scratched onto broken pottery.
No way.
Yes.
What did they say?
Well, they give us these little glimpses of everyday life.
Like what?
Like grain deliveries.
Yeah.
Troop movements.
Wow.
Even personal notes.
So it's like we have this direct line.
We do.
To their world.
It's incredible.
That is incredible.
And speaking of incredible.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Tel Dan inscription.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that the one that confirms King David actually existed?
That's the one.
Which some historians still debate about.
They do.
It's like finding a missing puzzle piece.
Exactly. And then there's the Siloam inscription.
Okay.
Detailing the construction of Hezekiah's tunnel.
Oh, wow. Wasn't that a pretty impressive feat of engineering?
Oh, absolutely. Bringing water into Jerusalem during a siege.
So we're talking military strategy, urban planning, engineering.
All in one inscription.
It's amazing how much we can learn from these texts.
It is amazing.
It really is.
And it doesn't stop there.
Okay.
Even place names.
Place names.
Something we often take for granted.
Yeah.
They can hold incredible historical clues.
Really?
Yeah. This is where toponymy comes in.
Toponymy. Okay. I'll admit I'm not familiar with that.
Well, think of it this way.
Okay.
Place names aren't just random labels.
Okay.
They often reflect the history, the culture, even the landscape of a region.
Oh, that's interesting.
There was this scholar, Edward Robinson, back in the 19th century.
Okay.
He was a pioneer in toponymy.
Uh-huh.
He actually used it to pinpoint the locations
of
biblical sites.
How'd he do that?
By analyzing language continuity.
Okay.
Water sources,
mm-hmm.
defensive positions, all described in those ancient texts.
So by understanding how place names evolved.
Exactly.
And what they reveal about the surrounding environment.
Yes.
We can get a clearer picture
of
where things happen.
Absolutely.
That's fascinating.
It is.
It really is.
It's just one of the many tools that helps us connect the dots, you know, between the biblical narrative. And the physical landscape of this land between.
Okay, so we've got
ancient
post-it notes.
We do.
Inscriptions.
Mm-hmm.
And even place names.
Place names.
Revealing all sorts of secrets.
Secrets.
But this land between is a pretty big area.
It is.
So did different regions.
They did.
Within it have like their own unique characteristics.
He did.
And challenges.
Absolutely. Think of it like a tapestry of landscapes.
Okay.
Each with its own story.
Okay. Hold on.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Okay.
I need a minute to process all this.
Take your time.
We've covered a lot of ground.
We have.
All right. So my brain is back online, I think. Where were we?
We were about to dive into those different regions.
Oh, right. Right. The tapestry of landscapes you were talking about.
Exactly. Each one with its own unique story.
So you mentioned the coastal plain, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
That fertile strip bordering the Mediterranean.
Ah, so prime real estate?
In a way, yes.
Hmm.
It was a hub for trade and cultural exchange.
Yeah. So like the Israelites' window to the wider world.
You could say that, but it also made them vulnerable.
Vulnerable how?
To invasion, of course. You know, seafaring powers like the Philistines.
Oh, yeah. The Philistines always causing trouble.
Always. So the coastal plain was this kind of double-edged sword.
Opportunity and danger all rolled into one.
Precisely. Now let's move inland a bit.
Okay, further into the land between.
Exactly, to the Shephelah, a region of rolling hills.
Between the coast and those central highlands we talked about.
You got it. Kind of a buffer zone.
So not exactly a peaceful place to settle down.
Not exactly.
Yeah.
More like a constant tug of war.
Between.
The Israelites and whoever wanted a piece of their land.
So like a battleground for control.
That's a good way to put it. Control shifted back and forth over the centuries.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a place I'd want to live.
Probably not the best place to build your dream home.
Okay, so no dream homes in the Shephelah. What about the Central Highlands, then? That sounds a bit more stable.
Definitely. The Central Highlands were the heartland of ancient Israel.
Okay, so that's where they really put down roots.
Exactly. It was mountainous, yes. But with these fertile valleys.
Perfect for growing all those essential crops.
Grain, new wine, oil, you name it. The highlands were the breadbasket of the region.
And I'm guessing those mountains provided some pretty good natural defenses, too.
You know it. Plus a cooler climate compared to the coast.
So the central highlands were like the stronghold of their faith and culture?
You could say that.
Yeah.
It's where they built cities like Jerusalem.
Ah, Jerusalem. The heart of it all.
And established their kingdoms.
Makes sense. Okay, so we've got the coast, the contested zone, and the heartland. What else is there in this tapestry?
Well, how about a dramatic plunge into the Jordan Rift Valley?
The Jordan Rift Valley. Okay, now we're talking.
This is where things get really interesting.
I bet. Tell me more.
This geological wonder stretches north to south.
Okay.
Holding the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River.
Yeah.
And the Dead Sea.
The Dead Sea. I've been there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like another planet.
It really is.
Yeah.
The lowest point on Earth.
Yeah, and that heat is intense.
The Jordan Rift Valley is a place of extremes.
That's for sure. You've got intense heat and aridity.
But also surprisingly lush vegetation.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Near those water sources, you'll find palm trees and date groves.
Wow. So it's not all just barren desert.
Not at all. It's this incredible mix of landscapes.
Talk about variety. It's amazing how much diversity you can pack into such a small area.
The land between is full of surprises.
Okay, so we've got the coastal plain, the Shephela, the Central Highlands, and the Jordan Rift Valley. What about east of the Jordan River? Didn't the lecture mention the Transjordan?
Right. That's where things get even more rugged.
Rugged how?
Big plateaus, deserts, and scattered oases.
Sounds like a challenge.
It was a challenge for sure. The perfect landscape for nomadic tribes.
So not a lot of settled agriculture happening over there?
Not as much as in the highlands. This was more about herding and adapting to the harsh conditions.
And didn't some kingdoms who clashed with the Israelites also call that region home?
You're thinking of Moab and Ammon.
Right. Right, Moab and Ammon, always stirring up trouble.
They had their own interests to protect.
It's like the Wild West of the ancient Near East.
Huh. I like that analogy. It was a frontier region, for sure.
Both challenging and full of opportunities for the Israelites.
Exactly. But to really grasp their story, we have to imagine all these regions overlaid with this network of ancient trade routes.
Oh, right. Those trade routes crisscrossing the entire land between...
This region was the bridge between those powerful empires to the north and south.
The only way to travel between them.
You got it. Which means the Israelites were smack dab in the middle.
Right in the middle of all that traffic.
And remember, those routes weren't just about moving goods.
What else?
They were conduits for ideas, technologies.
Okay.
Even religious beliefs.
So like the ancient version of globalization?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Except with camels and caravans instead of airplanes and the internet.
What kind of things were they trading?
Everything. Luxury goods like spices, incense, precious metals.
Okay, fancy stuff.
But also everyday commodities like grain oil and textiles.
So it wasn't just about the rich and powerful?
It was about connecting the entire region.
Wow. I can just imagine those bustling marketplaces.
Oh, yeah.
Overflowing with goods from all over the known world.
It must have been quite a sight.
And I bet controlling those trade routes meant serious power.
Oh, absolutely. Cities like Jerusalem, Jericho, Hazor, and Megiddo.
Big names.
They became strategic hubs.
Controlling access to all that commerce.
And that naturally led to competition.
And conflict.
Of course. With the Israelites often caught in the middle.
I can imagine. High stakes.
Very high stakes.
But it wasn't just economic and political power at play, was it? What about religious ideas? Were they being traded too?
That's right. Think of the Canaanite gods like Baal and Asherah.
Oh, yeah. Those were popular back then.
They were associated with fertility and agriculture.
Things that were pretty important to the Israelites.
Exactly. Their worship was widespread, and it presented a challenge.
A challenge to the Israelites' commitment to Yahweh.
Precisely. So it wasn't just about surviving in a challenging landscape.
Right.
It was about maintaining their faith.
Yeah.
Their identity.
In the face of all these external pressures.
You got it. And that's what makes understanding this historical geography so crucial.
It helps us see their story in a whole new light.
It helps us appreciate the complexity of their faith.
And the challenges they faced.
Exactly. The resilience of their faith.
In the face of some pretty overwhelming odds.
Absolutely. So we've talked about the land between...
The diverse regions.
Those trade routes.
The cultural and religious influences.
And the constant struggle to maintain their beliefs.
Geography wasn't just a backdrop to their story.
It was a driving force.
Shaping their experience at every turn.
Precisely. And there's still so much more to explore.
Like what?
Well, we haven't even touched on the archaeological evidence.
Ooh, archaeology. Now you're talking.
That brings these ancient texts and landscapes to life.
Okay, now I'm really interested.
But I think we need to save that for another deep dive.
Yeah, probably a good idea. I think we've given our listeners enough to think about for now. So much to think about, right? We've been all over this land between.
I know, right? It really makes you appreciate how much geography matters.
Yeah. It wasn't just some like random backdrop to the Bible.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
It was this powerful force shaping everything.
It's amazing how all those details, like those place names,
yeah,
the ones we usually just skim over,
right,
they suddenly have all this new meaning.
Like they come alive.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good reminder that the Bible,
yeah,
it's not just some book of stories and teachings.
It's so much more than that.
It's real people.
Real people.
Dealing with real challenges.
Exactly. In a very specific time and place.
Okay, so big picture time. Why does all this even matter to us?
That's the question, isn't it?
Like, why should we care about the historical geography of the Bible?
It changes how we read it.
Yeah.
How we understand it.
And maybe even,
yeah,
how we see our own place in the world.
Exactly. We're all products of our surroundings.
Just like the Israelites.
Exactly. By understanding their story.
Yeah.
Their struggles.
Their triumphs.
We can learn so much about faith.
Yeah.
About the challenges of living out our beliefs.
In a world.
In a world.
That's always trying to pull us,
yeah,
in different directions.
It's true.
I know I'm definitely going to be looking at those maps and those place names a, yeah, little differently from now on.
Me too.
So, folks, that wraps up our deep dive
into the historical geography of the Bible.
We hope you've enjoyed it.
And learned a thing or two.
And remember,
this is just the beginning.
There's so much more to discover.
Keep exploring.
Keep asking questions.
And most importantly,
keep diving.